At this hour, Slobodan Milosevic is in jail at The Hague. The former Yugoslav president is awaiting arraignment next week before the War Crimes Tribunal. Mr. Milosevic will be the first former leader charged with crimes against humanity that were allegedly committed while in office. The timing of this week's extradition surprised many in the international community and has also caused a shakeup in Yugoslavia's government. No one has covered the Balkans more intensively over the past few years than our Silvia Pajoli, who's covered the story on the ground since 1988, and we're pleased to have her in our studio here this morning. Silvia, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You saw Slobodan Milosevic come to power in 1987. Is it almost inconceivable now to see him, at least metaphorically, in chains?
Well, you know, the conventional wisdom in the Balkans had been for a long time that Milosevic would commit suicide, as his own father and mother did, before anyone could arrest him. But when Serb authorities moved in on his fortress home 3 years ago, three months ago in April, it was clear that the man known as the Balkan Bully was really a lot of hot air and histrionics. After a tense showdown with the police, his bodyguards, and his pistol-waving daughter, the butcher of the Balkans let himself be taken into custody. But this had been his pattern. He unleashed wars, tragedies, and massacres, but Milosevic always backed down when he came under strong pressure. Now, what I think is really interesting about this extradition is that it happened on June 28th. This is known as the Serbian, the curse of history. June 28th, 1389, the Serbs were defeated in Kosovo by the Turks, and that day has become part of the national mythology. It's the basis for a long-cherished collective victimization. Same day, Sarajevo in 1914, a young Serb nationalist, Gavrilo Princip, killed the Austro-Hungarian Archduke, started the First World War. And then on June 28th, 1989, a party hack named Slobodan Milosevic transformed himself definitively into the leader of the war-mongering Serbian nationalism. So I think it's quite appropriate that it's the same day that he should end up in the War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague.
Do we know specifically what charges he's going to have to answer for in The Hague?
Well, as it stands now, Slobodan Milosevic has been indicted for specific war crimes committed in Kosovo. He's indicted for a command responsibility in the deaths of more than 600 Kosovo Albanians. He has not been indicted for genocide, which was often cited as the justification for NATO's war against Yugoslavia. The UN tribunal prosecutor, Carla Lutponte, is preparing indictments against him for war crimes in Croatia and in Bosnia, where many more people were killed and massacred than in Kosovo. Now, it's not clear what the specific evidence is that should prove Milosevic's direct responsibility. He himself has been very, very careful not to leave a paper trail. I went and visited the National Archives in Belgrade, and I couldn't even find a photograph. It's as if he has never been there. Now, there's also the possibility that some Western leaders who negotiated with him for so long may not be so eager to hear Milosevic's testimony in his own defense. But I think this trial is really going to be, it's a major historical event, and we're entering uncharted territory.
Let me interrupt. You're suggesting some Western leaders may have aided, abetted, or at least encouraged him? Is this what they don't want heard?
No, it's not that. It's for many years, the West negotiated with Milosevic. He was known as, from war maker, he called himself peacemaker. There were all the so-called peace process that lasted for many, many months in Geneva from 93, 94, and then finally the Dayton Peace Accords, which were negotiated in Dayton, Ohio in 1995. For a long time, the West, American, European leaders said that Milosevic was necessary, keeping him in power, having him on the peacemaking side was necessary for stability in the Balkans. That changed in 98, 99 with the situation in Kosovo. But certainly many people believe that all that negotiating process with Milosevic also prolonged the wars in ex-Yugoslavia.
Let me ask you about what's happened in Yugoslavia since his arrest, since his extradition, because it set off a crisis in the reform government there, hasn't it?
There's a tremendous political fallout, political upheaval right now. The Yugoslav government, which was an odd marriage of convenience between the Serbian reformers that came into power last September and the hardliners, let's say pro-Milosevic forces from Montenegro. They had constantly been opposed to the extradition process, and they walked out of the government. Now, what this means right now is very unclear. It could lead to new elections, and actually could even lead to the final breakup of Yugoslavia between Montenegro and Serbia. The Serb reformers have vowed that they will pursue, they will go ahead, they will try to keep the government going. But it is a very complicated situation right now there.
Who else would the international community like to bring to justice in The Hague, who remains in Belgrade or nearby?
Well, the two major war criminals who have, alleged war criminals who have been indicted are this Bosnian Serb leader Radovan Karadzic and the Serbian general Ratko Mladic, most responsible for the massacre, the big massacre in Srebrenica in 1995. Now there, it's been a question that for a long time NATO troops either were unable or unwilling to arrest them. Certainly, Karadzic was known to be in Bosnia. Many people knew exactly where he was, near Sarajevo. Perhaps, I think, now the arrest of Milosevic will make it much, much easier to for all parties involved, for the Serbs themselves, to now move on and arrest these two, and it would be a major turning point for the Serbian people themselves to finally sort of deal with Serbian responsibility in the whole bloody decade that's just finished.
Mm-hmm. We're sitting here in a studio in Washington, D.C., but please use your knowledge to project us a little bit over into Yugoslavia. When we see demonstrations of people in support of Slobodan Milosevic, as we have over the past 24 hours, see signs held with his name on it. What are we seeing? Is it, at this particular point, a lunatic fringe? Is it, in fact, a much larger population?
Well, I think we have to remember that the majority of Serbs voted against Milosevic in the September elections. And yes, there have been demonstrations, and they've been loud and very nasty and quite aggressive. But the numbers were not very big. I understand 4,000, 6,000. These are not very big numbers. I mean, remember, Milosevic at one time used to be able to gather a million people in a field in the Gazi Mestan in Kosovo in 1989, or hundreds of thousands. They were bussed in by the party. This is true. But the fact is, the numbers are much smaller. It is a hardcore group. But some of them were not just demonstrating for Milosevic. There was a sense of malaise, I should say, about the way the extradition was handled. Some people felt that it was done in too much of an opportunist manner, just to get the money, or because they were being blackmailed by the Western powers for funds. So there is a hardcore group, but I think in the end, the great majority will be able to live with this very well. There's a younger generation that grew up under Milosevic but doesn't feel responsibility for him, and I think they're very much ready to move on and deal with the Serbia of the future.
Sylvia, thank you very much. So glad you could be here today.
Thank you, Scott.
NPR's Sylvia Poggioli.